You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Fantasy Sports Today. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We just had Emery Hunt on.
He's terrific.
Dropping some knowledge. He is. He knows. He's got a really good, well, he's a college football analyst, and he's pro football too, but his focus is really college football, and he's amongst the draft experts. He was down in Mobile at Senior Bowl week, so he saw some of these guys up close. He calls games at some lower levels of college football. He does Ivy League games. He does D2, D3 games at times during their playoffs, and so he's very good depth of knowledge mm-hmm. at players that are off of many people's radars. So yeah, he can talk about the top 25 and the guys that you see ranked in the top five at every position and all that kind of stuff, but he has got a really good depth of knowledge of players that are second day and third day mm-hmm. draft picks and stuff as well. So we'll have him on again soon. What we're planning on and what I'm planning on is each and every week we'll bring a college football analyst on so that we can talk to them about the upcoming draft and get a sense of the prospects. I know quarterbacks are dominating this draft season, but we'll try to get away from that a little bit too. It's just every time the quarterback news comes up with Garoppolo and the Cousins thing, it sparks a lot of discussion from me. And one guy that could find himself in the middle of this quarterback shuffle was granted his free agency by the NFL. He had a grievance hearing. I think he handled it well, but the reality is AJ McCarron came into the Bengals 4 years ago. Is it 4 years ago? Might have been 3 years ago.
I'll get that up for ago. You.
You look it up. So, in any event, his rookie season, he had had surgery and had to rest going into OTAs. But when training camp came, he was practicing throwing. Yeah, so that's why I figured it was 4 years. But he was then put on the non-football injury list, which you can be placed on when you have a college injury. The problem is he had been practicing with the Bengals. Then they put him on the NFI to start the season and kept him on the NFI list for a number of weeks. They kept him on the NFI list in order to delay his ability to get to free agency so they can own him as a player for a longer period of time. The problem is it wasn't really kosher, and the NFL understood that. And while the Bengals tried to deny him an extra year of service time, then thus allowing him to get to free agency, the NFL saw it in his favor, and AJ McCarron becomes now an unrestricted free agent. Now, we've talked about this QB shuffle. Let's just, for argument's sake, let's just say Cousins goes to the Vikings. And I know people out there are like, you're nuts. The Vikings have already said they don't want him. I don't know. I don't know if they're playing chicken with that. I also don't know. What is hard to tell is what their future salary cap will look like. The reality is they do have some players that are going to need to be paid. But let's just put them there for now. I have McCown going back to the Jets right now. I have the Cardinals making a move, going up to get Josh Rosen. This is all very wild speculation. Trust me, I know. Then I have Darnold going to the Browns. Then that leaves me with two teams without a quarterback altogether. Hmm. That's the Bills and the Broncos. Could A.J. McCarron be a fit for one of those teams? Now, keep in mind, I put Darnold and Rosen in there. You also have Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen out there, not to mention Lamar Jackson. But could A.J. McCarron conceivably get a starting job for one of these teams? Or does he become a Jaguars insurance policy? He seems to want to go somewhere and play. You don't always get what you wish for. But could A.J. McCarron be a starting quarterback on a team next season to start the year?
I think he's going to be. No, I'm not. Based on talent, should he be? I'm hesitant on that. I don't know if you saw Benjamin Albright's report of something that he had heard earlier. If the Browns struck out on Alex Smith, then they would try to have A.J. McCarron paired with the first overall quarterback, supposedly expecting it to be Darnold. I don't know if you came across that.
I did not.
Yeah, so that's the report, and I absolutely buy it. I think that they're
how about that?
I think it's layered. I think, one, they obviously were interested. They tried to make the A.J. McCarron trade. I think that Hugh Jackson wants his guy, right? There was the report that Watson was his guy. They ended up passing on him. And also, I'm not really sure that Dorsey wants Hugh Jackson there. So I almost feel like this is, and it's ridiculous that he's there and that this is how they're going to approach it, but I almost feel as if it's like, okay, cool. We're going to pair McCarron and Hugh Jackson and they'll do their thing. And I'm not even going to let's say it's Darnold, because I agree with that as well. Let's say it's Darnold is going to kind of more just sit back, learn. We'll maybe even pair him more closely with Haley. Of course, Haley will be involved in this whole process, but I anticipate that Hugh Jackson is probably going to still try to call the plays. And honestly, that's how I think you see this go. I think that Dorsey and the Browns front office will be willing to give their number one quarterback that time to wait, give Hugh Jackson that opportunity to coach up his guy, fail with his guy, move them both out at the year's end. That's why I think he's going to get a contract comparable to the one that Mike Glennon got last offseason. It'll be entirely front-loaded, maybe a two-year deal. After one, move on from the both of them, and then they'll potentially, maybe Todd Haley could get another crack at a head coaching position, or he'll just be a full-time play caller at OC, move Darnold into that full-time starting slot then the year after. And I think that might be the long-term plan for the Browns.
If this number one pick isn't John Dorsey's to make, I have no idea why he took the job. So I do think it is his pick to make. Mm-hmm. It's why I didn't think they would get involved in the Alex Smith or Kirk Cousins sweepstakes necessarily.
Right.
I think I could make sense of it if they wanted to sign Cousins. They have $110 million in cap space. So I could make sense of it if they wanted to make Cousins, just sort of solidify that position for the next 6 years. You know, you have a known commodity. But if you're John Dorsey, and I've heard him give interviews where he talks about he thinks he's the builder of a team, I think that he's going to want to draft his own guy because he knows he can hire a coach that can develop him. He's got to think that about himself. Right. He can't just say, you know, let's play it safe here. He just got the job. He's going to want to try and build a team with a rookie quarterback. He can have Kaiser. He can do the McCarron thing. It could be a McCarron, could be a carbon copy of what happened to Mike Glennon. And if Sam Darnold outplays A.J. McCarron, then they're just going to eat the $15 million bucks or whatever. Yeah. Make it a team-friendly deal, but give AJ some guarantees. So he's got $25 million in his pocket. He's not going to go around. I mean, he's not going to be shopped around like Cousins is going to be shopped around. There's just no body of work there. So I'm not a big believer in AJ McCarron beyond that. But there's obviously some familiarity there. I think Dorsey can make it a team-friendly deal and give Hugh Jackson his guy to give him a chance. You know, if A.J. McCarron plays two back, what did Glennon get? Was it two games?
I thought maybe it was three. I'll see. I think
take a look at his game logs. I want to feel like he got benched. I want to feel like he got benched about 2.5 games in. So, in any event, so that's where I'm at on McCarron. But I just wonder.
Four games.
Okay.
The Packers game was his last game. Four games for Madden.
Got it. So a little more than I thought. But so here's the QB shuffle to continue talking about it. Here's the teams where I can make an argument that they need to draft a quarterback. The Bengals. Andy Dalton right there. They are committed to some money. But honestly, if they wanted to cut Andy Dalton right now, they're out of it pretty clean. Yep. It's like $2.3 million is the cap hit this year. After this year, they can cut him easy peasy. No more hits to the cap. They might have some residual guarantees, but it's not a lot of money. So Andy Dalton is on a team friendly deal right now. I think they could conceivably draft somebody. The problem is Marvin Lewis is still there. So he's going to build the team the way he wants to do it. And I don't know that he's going to put heat on Andy Dalton with any kind of a first-round pick. I think you could see a mid-round pick going to the Bengals. The Bills, wide open. Nathan Peterman's the only guy there. Then you got the Broncos, Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, Brock Osweiler. That's kind of a mess. They've drafted five quarterbacks since 2012, the most in the league. I think you can count on them drafting a sixth quarterback. I just wonder if they can get in the mix for Cousins or consider McCarron to be a consolation prize. I see them less likely for McCarron only because they have a bunch of guys like him already, unless they're in love with him somehow and we don't know about it. The Browns, you got Darnold conceivably there, whoever wins out with DeShone Kizer as a backup. The Cardinals are probably the team most bereft of quarterbacks on the roster, and they're going to have to draft somebody. Do they move up and get Josh Rosen? Do they stay where they are and take somebody else? Or just draft Josh Rosen where they are right now. Other teams, the Dolphins. Ryan Tannehill is the quarterback for this season.
Are we sure?
What is their long-term plan? They have said multiple times that he's the quarterback. I've heard Adam Gase say it multiple times. I think because he's on a team-friendly deal, he did a very good job, in their opinion, in many articles that I read, in staying with the team and working with Cutler and working with Matt Moore to try to help the team. They felt like his attitude was in the right place. So I do think he starts September. That's where he'll be. But what's their long-term plan? Do they have to have an insurance policy there?
Is that safe for Gase?
I mean, not Chad Henne. Matt Moore's is a free agent. They're going to need somebody there. Is what safe for Gase?
To move forward with Tannehill, I just think that Gase could be someone who's on the hot seat if they are not. Honestly, if they're not a wild card team, like, I very well think that Gase could be fired. However, I think that if they drafted a quarterback in the first round, I think that extends his, you know, expected lifespan as the head coach of the Dolphins. I just don't know if that makes any sense
for him. Actually, I look at it the other way. I think if they're drafting to rebuild, there's too much money wrapped up in the defensive contracts on this team. They have the fourth least cap space. They have to win now, and bringing in a rookie, expecting him to do that, is too much. So if they are looking at a rookie quarterback, then Adam Gase shouldn't be the guy to coach him. And they're not going to make that move now, obviously. As we continue to go through, the Giants, I'm going to take them at face value that they want Eli to play in September. They are in a similar position to the Steelers, where they drafted a guy in the mid rounds as a project. That why are we giving up on this guy that we just drafted, unless they already know that he doesn't have the goods? But you got Davis Webb in New York, you got Josh Dobbs in Pittsburgh. Both teams need to look past their current quarterback situation, but don't necessarily have to. I mean, the Steelers aren't going to bench Ben. The Giants don't have to bench Eli if you get somebody that knows what they're doing as a head coach.
I guess the one difference would be that the Giants didn't draft. The people in charge now did not draft Webb, and opposed to the people who are still running the Steelers did take Dobbs. I don't know. Did you come across the report of Eric Galco of Optimum Scouting saying that the Bills are very aggressively scouting Josh Rosen, and he was saying that it could make sense that they try to make a big package to move up to two with the Giants to see if they can land Rosen?
They have a ton of draft picks.
They do.
They're the team I think is most likely to move up, because they have so many draft picks. If they don't get involved in the Cousins thing, which I don't think they can.
I don't either.
Let me look back. Let me see. Bills, $29 million. That's all their cap space. They've already tried to clear some cap space. They're not going to spend it on Cousins. I just see it as being unlikely. They could get in an A.J. McCarron scenario and have him on a Mike Glennon type of deal. They could do something like that, but at the same time, they can play Nate Peterman and make
they
sure that he's capable. I know it's a difficult scenario because the other players just watched him throw 5 interceptions and a half.
He's horrible.
But they did draft him. They threw him in there when he wasn't ready because they were desperate, but that's another story for another day, the way they screwed that up. But the reality is, I do think they're the most likely to move up. They have 6 picks in the first 3 rounds, I believe it is. So I can see them moving up and taking somebody. I guarantee they take a quarterback in the first round. It's just where they move up to.
Do you think the Giants would be wise to pull back and obtain more assets? Because this is the thing about the Giants, right? If they don't go quarterback, I feel like that's them positioning or approaching it with a win-now mentality, not to say that they don't have players that have a longer window, right? Like the offensive core is young, at least the receiving core is. I think that they've got encouraging players within that defense that aren't at past their prime. Is that wise for them to approach this season as a season that they could conceivably compete for the NFC East crown and, you know, further beyond that? Is that better for them than going quarterback?
I think the G-men are in one of the more difficult positions to evaluate because they were 11-5 team that completely fell apart. They also had four injured wide receivers. They had discontent in the locker room. They had a head coach that, frankly, didn't know what he was doing and couldn't handle the team. So would it really stun you that if Shurmur came in and fixed the offense, got Eli's weapons to be healthier, he handles the Odell Beckham thing, which is another, is almost a separate topic altogether. Mm. Would it stun you if the Giants bounced back and made the playoffs? There's defensive talent all over the place.
I genuinely
know some guys were unhappy, but I think a total blow up rebuild of the Giants is the wrong move.
You would have a better chance convincing me that the Giants have the best roster in football than the second worst roster in football. Like
that's right.
They're a much better team than what they were last year, and it was the perfect storm of things to collapse what was that foundation. Ultimately, I do think that that's why it's a little tough for them, because they're an organization that feels as if they are not going to be back in this position. So being there, it feels like you should try to capitalize and take that franchise quarterback. That way you don't have to go compete with Eli, huge drop down year, take quarterback, go for the quarterback, he's not rested, and then it's kind of a little bit quicker to trigger it. That's why I like the idea of them taking quarterback, but I can't fault this team looking at their guys and saying, we can compete now, we can go for it.
I would, if I were the Giants and I got a godfather offer, not a godfather offer, a really good offer, I'd take it. I don't know what this coaching staff thinks of Davis Webb. That's the big X factor. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about this and other topics on Fantasy Sports Today.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
On the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. What happened? What did I miss? Coming right out of the break, you're laughing.
Pete just gave me a little cue, and I don't even know if it was on purpose to make me laugh, but he was like singing along while giving me the cue. It was perfect.
Oh, nice. Well done. What do we got here? I got to do some sort of a read, which, you know, I come prepared. I try to. So you hit us up on Twitter today at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett, at the Kevin Walsh. And in addition to that, Fantasy Factor is the perfect daily fantasy site for the casual recreational player. We have flatter prize pools, smaller fields, and single-entry contests only. Fantasy Factor runs NHL and NBA free rolls every week, which means free entry. So simply sign up and enter www.fantasyfactor.com. So we were talking a little bit about the NFL. We can continue on that front. We talked about the QB shuffle and all the potential landing spots for those guys. But in addition to that, we have some franchise tag discussions that are coming up here on the NFL. The primary one being Le'Veon Bell and whether or not you think the Steelers tag him like they did last year in order to try to negotiate. They did this last year. They tried to negotiate. They hit the deadline, and they ended up with $14 million guaranteed, which was the highest paid running back in football. Problem is, if they do it again and they don't negotiate the proper deal in time by the deadline, Le'Veon's probably going to sit out for the entirety of the season. So they don't want to be there. So give me some thoughts first on what would you consider to be the way this may go.
It's odd because I think that they need Le'Veon Bell. Like, I really don't think that they should be trying to figure out how valuable this team is through his absence. Like, we know how good Le'Veon Bell is. He's the first or second best running back in all of football. And this is a team that they are going to win through their offense, I think, primarily. Because their defense is improving, and I thought their defense was a lot better at the beginning of the year. Honestly, I think that you could make a strong case that if Shazier had not got hurt, the Steelers might have honestly won the Super Bowl, because there was such a huge difference from team with Shazier and then sans Shazier. They need their offense, though, to continue to win games for them. What it comes down to is, and it was a point made when we had Gary Davenport on that was absolutely brilliant, was the way that they're working Le'Veon Bell, he felt in a way led him to believe that they're not intending to bring him back. I don't know if I would necessarily go that far, but it does make me think that the way they're working him means that they're not anticipating actually reaching that long-term agreement. I actually think perhaps the Steelers' plan of action might be an ideal world, franchise tag him again, and then maybe he just walks after the coming season.
Yeah, but he won't play under the tag is the problem they're going to have.
Didn't he walk that back a little bit? And he said, maybe I would?
That's a good question.
I think he did. I'll pull it up.
Well, Bucky Brooks from NFL.com, he was saying that the Steelers flat out shouldn't pay him. He just thinks that at this stage, the teams like the Eagles have proven that you need to save your money at that position, or you can save your money at that position and spend it where it might be needed elsewhere. Problem is, the Steelers have made comments to the effect that they want to sign him, that they're trying to bring him back, and they're the kind of players that demand a large salary. We're going to do our best to make it work. This is Art Rooney II. They're the kind of players that command a large salary. We want to do our best to make it work. That's what you want, the best players on your team. So
I have the update. This is from February 2nd. It's on the Roto World app, and it's from NFL.com. It says, Le'Veon Bell said, yeah, a lot of it is about guarantees. That's what a long-term deal really is. You want that security. He has also changed his tune on being franchise tag, saying he has no plans to hold out if the Steelers tag him again in 2018. When asked if he'd accept a deal worth $50 million in guaranteed, Bell said, quote, absolutely. The deadline to assign the tag is March 6th. So if he's changed his tune on that tag and he's willing to play, because this is the thing, both sides are saying the right things, right? Their GM recently came out that he wants Le'Veon Bell to remain a Steeler. Le'Veon Bell says that his priority is to remain a Steeler. So if he's under the impression that they're just going to tag him to make things easier, which I don't really think is, I don't really know how you could believe that, but if he's willing to accept the tag, do you think that would be the best move for them?
If he's willing to accept the tag, then yes, that's the best deal for them. They are going to have to move some money around either way because the Steelers are capped out. They have been capped out for years. luckily, they've had a good team during that time, so they're not just spending money frivolously. The problem is they haven't won a Super Bowl in 10 years. So they are in the third worst position on the salary cap. You know who's in the worst position regarding the salary cap?
I feel like it's a team that really shouldn't be. Whom is it? I forget.
It's the most successful team in the NFL this year. The Eagles are underwater right now on the cap.
Right.
Doesn't mean that they won't alleviate that in some capacity in the upcoming season, but they are $10 million over right now. The Chiefs are right on the line, $12,000 difference.
Wait.
The Steelers, this is according, by the way, all to overthecap.com. I think they do a really good job with this information, so I use it as a resource. Could there be some differing money issues here? Yeah, sure. But
I have a question.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to sign free agents right now? Because I don't know how they have already traded away Alex Smith, and we have the particulars of the contract that they've given Amerson, the free agent corner. Like, this all is, I know that, like, normally,
it's
like,
all in NFL insider work. So that's the deal that they have a handshake agreement on, but they're not allowed to do it until the season year begins, which you said March 6th was the franchise tag. I think the free agency is right after that. So you'll see those things start to move pretty quickly.
Like, I know that normally, I remember, I think it was 2 years back, Malik Jackson, like, his contract was all signed with the Jaguars, like, before the actual day hit. But I feel as if them having this all locked up well before Perhaps it's because he was cut, so obviously then he has like no, like there's no potential for him to be tagged. Is that how it all works out?
No, they can't sign that deal, I don't think, officially until the league year begins.
Like, there's a moratorium. No, that's not like a tampering thing, is it?
No, if he's not owned by another team at the time his contract isn't owned by another team, I don't think that's a problem at all. But it's a good question. It's a fair question about the specific particulars. It might be because he's a free agent. I know there's other teams like right after the Super Bowl that like were picked up off waivers and that kind of stuff. So I think when it comes to signing free agents, usually you got to wait. But maybe that's a deal in agreement to them making it official in March. Anyway, other franchise tag possibilities. DeMarcus Lawrence, Dallas Cowboys, right up there at the top of the food chain for sacks this year. I think he came in second to Chandler Jones. It seems like he's going to be a franchise tag possibility. Other guys, this is according to, I want to give a shout out to Greg Rosenthal from NFL.com. He said there's the eight most likely candidates. So you had Bell there, you had DeMarcus Lawrence. My computer is just killing me. I apologize. But if you have that article in front of you, Kevin, help me out.
Isn't the internet the best?
Oh, here we go. I got it. Allen Robinson. Still, it would be strange for the free-spending Jaguars to allow one of their best offensive draft picks of the decade to leave with nothing coming back in return. It'll be difficult to keep both Robinson and fellow free agent receiver Marquise Lee, so look for the Jaguars to make Robinson the priority. So that guy coming off an ACL, but obviously massively productive for them. He's an afterthought this season because they were so successful. But Allen Robinson, a guy that could demand a fair amount of money on the open market, it probably makes the most sense for everybody in the league to have this guy franchise tagged so you know what he looks like and he can play himself into a bigger deal.
Yeah, I think so. I think that that's a pretty obvious one. The guy underneath him that he's mentioned within the article, Sammy Watkins, is one of the more interesting names to me just because of the situation. I think originally you would have said that he was like he was the best wide receiver for the Rams like preseason. That would have been the prediction. And they gave up the second round pick. I know there were other things that worked out within that deal to get Watkins. Can I say that he is the third option in LA now? Like, is it going to be worth it? What's he going to be expecting?
He was this year.
I mean, I don't know. My guess would be Watkins is out in LA. I don't know how you feel towards that.
I would say he's out. If they can franchise tag him, the problem is it's a lot of money towards a guy that he just said it might be the third option. Beyond that, it's possible that they can tag LaMarcus Joyner over Watkins. ESPN Rams reporter Alden Gonzalez expects the Rams to tag Watkins. They invested a lot in their trade for the former first-round wideout. I guess that's something you have to keep into account.
Yeah,
they did trade a bunch away. Gave them a second-round pick and a cornerback, and they feel like maybe another offseason. The receiver tag is $16.2 million. He was the fourth leading receiver this past season, not even third. So maybe they're suspecting that another offseason together with Goff can make Sammy the real deep threat that he is. Then you have Cooper Kupp as a possession receiver. Robert Woods, a good guy opposite of that. But that kind of upsets the apple cart. It makes Sammy Watkins the number one receiver again. And honestly, at this point of his career, is anybody banking on Sammy Watkins to be a number one?
I don't
fantasy-wise?
Think so. I mean,
not even fantasy wise.
I just don't know how, if you look at that team and if you look at the success that McVay had, how do you really feel like that's necessary, right? Like, can't you have enough faith in McVay that if you grab, say, the wide receivers are all over the place in some of these, you know, projections, but, you know, maybe they're able to grab James Washington in the second round. Is that better value than, well, they don't even have a second round pick, right? Because they had to give that up for Watkins. I guess that's what it really comes down to is, do they feel like they have to make sure they keep Watkins that way they didn't make a foolish move when they traded for him to begin with? I guess that's probably, maybe that's what keeps Watkins there, is them not wanting to look foolish in their pursuit of him.
Couple other guys, Kyle Fuller from the Bears, Andrew Norwell from the Panthers, Ziggy Ansah from the Lions. Couple of injury-plagued seasons. He's obviously a guy with still a lot of potential. They have $40 million in cap space, so they have to and they can clear the deck for more, according to this article. So it's going to be at a big price, $17.5 million. But I think when you have a guy like that that's a pass rusher, that's where you spend money. You spend money in four areas on football teams. Quarterback. Yes. Left tackle.
Yes.
Pass rusher.
Yes.
Shutdown corner.
Yes.
So he's one of those. That's why you can spend the money. You just spent the money on the quarterback. He got him. You have Slay there at corner. And they have a tackle as well. He's hurt this year. But Taylor Decker was hurt. But they have the four positions where you'd want guys to be. They just need to shore up other areas of that team.
The Lions are
I feel like they've built it okay.
They're so odd to me because I feel like every year everyone's way higher on them than I am. And it's not necessarily like there's talent there for sure. Stafford is he's good. I don't know how good. Like he has great numbers. Overall, like what is the outlook for a team like the Detroit Lions? Cuz all like let's just say Cousins lands where we both think he does in Minnesota. They're clearly behind them. As long as Aaron Rodgers plays in Green Bay, they're clearly behind him. You just brought in a new head coach. Like, I just don't know. Not to say that they should just like roll over for those two teams, but I just, what is the outlook? What are the expectations for this team in Detroit? I think it's tough to gauge.
I think they're a difficult team to analyze as well because of what you mentioned. They're some probably seen as third in their division, but they have key pieces in important positions. They've drafted a middle linebacker. They haven't run for 100 yards in a game in, I think, 68 games now. So they can't get any kind of balance. They pay Matt Stafford a lot of money because he's a good quarterback and he came up at that time and that's what he gets paid.
Yeah.
I do think Stafford is pretty legit, but it's constantly the problem that they've had is they play so many tight games. Not that other teams don't as well, but they play so many tight games. It just comes down to, well, can Stafford bring us to a win in the fourth quarter? It's like that every game. That's why they keep going 8-8 and 9-7.
Right.
You can't just rely on him to do that every week. You never have anybody rushing for 100 yards. You never have a ground attack that's worth anything. They throw a higher percentage of passes than almost any team in the league every year, and it's just up to Stafford to kind of do it, and it's just not a feasible way to continue to win.
Well, let me ask you that on that discussion. Apparently they're linked to Deion Lewis in the real aspect of the Lions, but in fantasy, how exciting could that potentially be if that was a landing spot?
There's four guys there every year. That's the problem. Somebody's always trying to figure out who the Lions guy is going
to
be.
But is Lewis good enough to get people all the way in? Right? Because Theo Riddick does well. I think people would be more excited about a Lewis. And people are probably ready to move on from Abdullah. I'm not here trying to make the case that Lewis should be.
Deion Lewis will not have a better year in Detroit next year than he had this year in New England. He won't.
I don't disagree.
That would be my bet on that. A couple other big names, Jarvis Landry, Case Keenum, Jimmy Graham, all guys that are potentially up there. It's not expected to happen to Landry, but he's a big name out there.
He's a really big name.
I think he's horribly underrated. I don't know what the strife is between him and the team, but they're going to let a guy walk that is easily their most talented receiver. As much as you can like Devontae Parker, he hasn't done it. Jarvis Landry currently has the record for a receiver in his first four seasons number of receptions.
He's incredibly talented, and there's a lot of teams that need wide receiver. Like, you cannot tell me that the Bears would not be willing to give, pour out the big bucks for a guy like him. And even a team like San Francisco would love to have him. Like, you need wide receivers, and Jarvis Landry is an incredibly talented wide receiver. I know in fantasy a lot of time we're like, this guy doesn't score touchdowns. Well, guess what? He catches 100 passes. Like, he shows up, he puts pads on, catches 100 balls, and that's the floor.
People keep slotting him into the Bears, which is interesting, but like the Niners have money, the Jets have money, the Texans, the Titans. Like, if he was on the Titans, that could transform them.
That'd be something.
We'll come back.
Spot.
We're going to close out the show after this. It's Mike and Kevin on the Fantasy Sports Today show.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
We are back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Fantasy Sports Today closing out this segment. We've got about 15 minutes to go. Then it's Weekend Fantasy Update. That's Joe Galina and Tony Sincotta. They're on from 12 to 3. And then from 3 to 5, it's In This League with Bogman and the Welsh. So beyond that, every 3 minutes, an American is diagnosed with blood cancer. Unfortunately, only 30% of patients are able to find a compatible bone marrow donor within their family. But that's how you can help. So go to dkms.org/fantasy today and sign up online to register as a donor. DKMS will send you a swab kit, which takes legitimately 1 minute to do, just 1 minute. You swab each of your cheeks and send it back to them, and that's it. You're done. DKMS will then try and match you up with a person in need of a donation. The process is easy. Best of all, you can actually save someone's life, not metaphorically, but quite literally. Check out dkms.org/fantasy to see how you can help. Sorry, lacked a little punctuation on that read there, so I had to pause in the middle of it. But in any event, we've been working with DKMS for, gosh, certainly since before football season. We've had a lot of good feedback. They've gotten a lot of awareness, so please do that. dkms.org/fantasy. You'll find out a lot more about how you can help. You can donate, you can become a bone marrow donor, and do some of the things that I mentioned in that last read. So MLB free agents. We saw Yu Darvish sign the big deal with the Cubs on earlier this week. And my first reaction from some of my friends over text that are Yankees fans are like, thank God the Yankees didn't get involved in that. What are your thoughts on that deal for the Cubs? How do you like Darvish fitting in at Wrigley?
I mean, I like it for the Cubs just because I think that this is a team that should have World Series expectations. And if they're going to lose Arrieta, you do need to replace that. So getting Yu Darvish is good. And I also do think if the Cubs perhaps, let's say the Cubs pulled out of the race, maybe it would have put Darvish in a spot where he ended up choosing Milwaukee. I know he wasn't keen on that, but then that's also like addition by subtraction, right? So if you keep him, not only are you going to keep him out of Milwaukee, but now you have him in-house as well. I think that's good. Long-term, how well does the deal work out for them? It's up in the air, but at the end of the day, I think with contracts like this, if the Cubs get a World Series within the next 2 years, those things just become worth it. I think that's how a lot of people, I mean, the Hayward contract is horrible, and I don't know if that's how people feel about it, but they won a World Series, so it at least lessens the blow.
It is horrible. It's a horrible contract.
It's very bad.
We've detailed this before. Lorenzo Cain and Christian Yelich are committed. The Brewers are committed to less money for them over the next 5 years than the Cubs are to just Jason Hayward. There's a gap of like $25 million. It's crazy, but you know, I'm not blaming Jason Hayward. I'm just saying, you know, that looks like a ridiculous signing now. And I know people are going to tell me how great his defense is, but it's not worth that much. But guys still out there, J.D. Martinez, Jake Arrieta, Hosmer, Moustakas, Lance Lynn, Alex Cobb. Those are all according to this free agency tracker, which I'm looking at on
CBS. What do you think this does for Jake Arrieta with Darvish signing, the money that he signed for situationally? How do you think this plays out for him?
Well, Arrieta's got an injury history that Darvish doesn't have. I mean, Darvish, I guess that's not fair to say. Darvish has an injury history, too. They're the same exact age. I think Darvish was going to command more than Arrieta was. But people are, look, there's only so many teams that can commit a big amount of money to a pitcher that's over 31. So I would imagine it's going to help him command a higher salary, but at the same time, like, how many teams are still out there looking at dump a bunch of money into Jake Arrieta? It just doesn't really, I don't know how it washes. It's going to be a tough investment for anybody.
Has it worked it for Milwaukee? Because I feel like Milwaukee is looking at this position that they're in right now. They have to feel good about their lineup. Yelich and Kane are on good deals, right? You just mentioned they are combined less expensive than what Jason Hayward is. They don't have the pitching, though. Everybody that goes through that team comes back with the same response of the pitching's not there. So is it worth it for them, even if it's overpaying, to give themselves a chance by bringing in a Jake Arrieta?
It's the age-old question. You know, do they feel like they have the pockets to plunk down money like that? They made a big trade. They got rid of their number one prospect. He goes to Miami, and they bring in Christian Yelich. Now they got they obviously also signed Lorenzo Cain. Do they feel like they have even more money to give up to replace or to bolster this pitching staff? Yes, they definitely need another arm, but I don't see them as being the team that will do it. If they do it, it'll be when Arrieta is starting to get desperate. And it is kind of crazy because teams have already reported games are going to start next Friday, and there's still tons of these guys. That you look at this top 50 of free agents, there's still a bunch of guys out there. You got it's big-name guys like J.D. Martinez and Arrieta and Moustakas and Lynn and Cobb, and then it's Logan Morrison, who had 40 homers, I believe, last year. It's Lucroy, Greg Holland, a reliever that anybody would want, but he's apparently looking for more money than what's been offered to him. Carlos Gomez hanging out there. Neil Walker. Carlos Gonzalez, a former star. Tony Watson, a good left-handed reliever. Jared Dyson, who's obviously a speedster, is kind of his singular skill. He's a defensive and player who can steal bases, but at the same time, could he be an asset on a team? I feel like he's the type of guy that will get signed, and he's just, you know, he's one of those guys that's waiting for the chips to fall. Yeah. Jason Vargas is 35 years old. He's coming off a great season, but he's 35 years old. He's not going to command the money that somebody like Arrieta would. Chris Tillman is out there. He's only 29 years old. Does he get shelled half the times he goes out there? Yeah, but could somebody like the Mets use somebody like that just to bolster their staff? You have to almost feel like if you're a Mets fan that one or two of these guys is going to get hurt, and you just need that depth.
Well, they made the move with Vargas. They did make the move to bring Vargas in, so is that the move that gives them enough confidence? That's one of the things with the Mets as a whole that I think is very tough to appropriately predict them, right? Because if they lean on pitching and it's a very talented staff, I think that there's honestly a case to be made that between Syndergaard, DeGrom, and Mats, that any one of them could be the most talented there. I think most people would say Syndergaard, and but if they all have these injury problems, obviously so does Harvey, so does Zach Wheeler. So if that's where you're going to pull all your chips in and you can't trust them to be out there, it just becomes really, really difficult. So on one end, like, I appreciate that they are attempting to add depth with a guy like Vargas, but, you know, if Vargas has to come in and, I mean, what if he cracks the rotation? Like, how great do you feel about the Mets? I just think it's a tough little spot for them.
So I have to say, I have to raise my hand with a mea culpa, because I did not realize, as I was going through stuff last night and this morning, I did not realize the Mets brought in Jason Vargas, so I actually like that. And Pete also informed me, as I was shooting my mouth off, that Tony Watson signed with the Giants last night, and I like that signing as well. The thing I would say about Vargas is he's not going to be expected to come in here and be a savior of any kind. I can just tell you that exactly a year ago, we sat here, and when the Mets had seven starting pitchers, and we were debating, well, what are they going to do with Mats and Lugo? And do they really need seven starting pitchers? Can they move one of these guys for something else? And you know what? They needed all of them and more. So I don't mind them bringing in an arm like this. You can't suspect that Syndergaard is going to come in and just be lights out again, or that Harvey or Wheeler or Mats or anybody is going to be healthy. So I think that's the perfect kind of signing for them. And I was listening to some other sports radio shows earlier this week, and they were pining. I mean, we're in the New York area, and they were pining for like a veteran arm. And the Chris Tillman thing came up on that show. And I think Jason Vargas is the type of guy that probably fits the Mets perfectly. They didn't have to break the bank on him, and it brings in another arm that you know they're going to need.
Let me ask you about JD Martinez in terms of what he should do. I was having a conversation with someone, and the idea was tossed around of him signing a contract like Yonis Cespedes first signed with the Mets, that two-year opt-out after one deal. Do you think that that could work for him? Because right now, I think there are teams who are, you know, they have tight pockets, right? They don't want to overspend. They want to correct the market. But also, I do think that there are teams who are looking towards next year's potential free agents, and they're hoping to spend the money there. If that becomes the case, right, so Bryce Harper, if he hits the open market, and there are seven teams that are saying, we're willing to pay whatever it may take. Well, he's only going to land in one. If that leaves six teams with open pockets, then does JD Martinez get the contract that he wanted this year next year? Your thoughts on that potential?
I think that's an interesting question, and it's a fair one to say. I would also say JD Martinez is 30, and he was staring at a $200 million contract that he turned down. How much better does he think it's going to get? How much better does his agent think it's going to get? I think there's always pressure on Major League Baseball players that they don't participate in a market correction. I'm sure Jay Bruce got a little bit of a side-eye look from some people that he could have waited it out a little bit longer, but he's looking at $39 million in the face. Who's turning that down? A normal person. JD Martinez is looking at a $200 million contract. He is on the wrong side of 30. I know he's just 30, but he's on the wrong side of 29, however you want to say it. And I don't know how much better it's going to get. I do think that's an interesting proposal from you, but how can he guarantee it would play out like that? He wants to do a prove-it deal for 2 years and then get another six-year deal so that he's 38 by the end of it? Take the six-year deal, $200 million, you're in good shape. That's just how I look at it. There's a market correction going on, and yes, down the road, will he realize that maybe there was another $30, $40 million? I'm not here to spend people's money. But right now, you're going to get the biggest free agent bonanza on the market, maybe along with Darvish. So, yeah, I do think he's going to have to sign on the dotted line at some point soon. And if not, then he might be the guy playing a one-year $25, $20 million prove-it deal or $18 million prove-it deal, and he will have left $182 million on the table.
I will say this. I don't know if he has to prove it, right? Like, it's more so just about teams don't want to spend that much. So it's not, all right, let me wait to
that's
prove
probably
it.
That's a wrong way to phrase it.
No, that's how I kind of phrase it myself. I don't know if right, but it's not proving it. It's more so just waiting until people are willing to pay you what you want. And it's just that at the time right now, like, it's not nobody's doubting whether if JD Martinez is good. We know he's good. We've seen him be good. It's all value. So I guess that would because the thing is, he could take, you know, the two-year opt-out after one type of contract and comes next year and people are like, you're a year older. And guess what? You actually had a down year, and we're still not giving out those type of contracts unless you're Bryce Harper, top five player in baseball, who's 24. Like, sorry, JD, you're 31 and not a top five player in baseball.
Yeah. So he remains unsigned. The problem, the conundrum for us, obviously, is that with fantasy drafts ongoing, and they're going to start to heat up through the rest of February, halfway through February now, and for the next 6 weeks, we got guys that are still, you know, drafts, real drafts are happening now. And we're still trying to figure out where these guys are going to land. You just have to really go by the historical data that you have and plug JD Martinez in. I can't assume that he's not going to be signed until May and I'm eliminating April. I have to go under the assumption, if I'm drafting him, that he's in camp here in the next couple of weeks. Does he have to be there first day of camp? No, but it is one of the oddest dynamics that I can remember in all of professional sports off seasons throughout my entire life. There are so many free agents that are unsigned. Yeah. Maybe we're seeing the dam start to break a little bit with these couple of lower level signings, but still, you know, of the top 50 free agents, we still have a good 10 guys that are out there. As far as you doing a baseball draft, are you going to shy away from guys that aren't on teams, or are you just going to take them at face value for what they've done?
I mean, it's tough, right? Like, is JD Martinez really not going to be on a team? Like, I guess, too, it comes down to what point. Like, if let's say, you know, I have rankings and, you know, JD Martinez is 20th, right? And but the 23rd guy on the board is also an outfielder. He's lower, but all right, well, if at least I can guarantee him, like, maybe that's the thing is where, you know, if things are close, you just go with the guy who you is currently in training camp. I wanted to ask you about something that there's just a report about Charlie Blackmon potentially moving down to the three hole at, instead of leading off, and just how much of an impact that can have. Because I remember one time I heard this quote from Curtis Granderson, who said, you only, like, bat once in the spot that you are designated in any given game, really, right? So if you're the leadoff hitter, it doesn't mean you're going to lead off every inning. But I know Blackmon was leading off for them for a while. He's coming off the gigantic year, but a big part of that is he had 37 home runs, and in the leadoff spot, that may feel wasted. So moving him to the three hole, does that move you up on him? Does it become dangerous then because maybe there's less opportunity for runs? And now if the power doesn't stay at that level, I'm just curious how that could impact someone's thoughts on a guy like Charlie Blackmon.
It's a good question. I mean, he was healthy last year. He played 159 games, all kinds of production. I was a huge fan of his. But with 37 homers, moving him down in the lineup, I don't really see how it's going to hurt that production in any kind of material way. Will the at-bats go down? Possibly slightly, but you have to take the batting average for what it is. And I think ultimately the power for what it is. So the run production could be there. That could even go up slightly, even if the runs come down slightly. It's not going to change him materially for me. He had 14 stolen bases last year. He might have to dial that back to single digits. But honestly, like Charlie Blackmon, it's like, you know, up at the top of your draft every time, and I don't think people are going to be too scared away from it.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, too. And if the power stays right in the three hole, then maybe the RBIs can make up for, you know, perhaps the losses in a stolen base or something like that. I think it's interesting because, I mean, obviously people who are, if they're drafting right now, not that it's too far away, but they're experts. So there's always looking for little tidbits and tips like that. So it's interesting to see how that could impact someone's perspective.
Blackmon going 7th in NFBC drafts. People aren't worried about it at all. I'm not either. Mike and Kevin, Fantasy Sports Today, we're out. It's Weekend Fantasy Update next on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
See you.